Hi, so I wanted to thank the organisers for having us here today and for coming along, and also to acknowledge the Whadjuk people, the traditional owners of this land. So yeah, I'm talking about barriers and access to contraception and abortion services, and my focus is really on people experiencing homelessness, but a lot of the principles I talk about can be extended to other marginalised populations as well. So as an overview, my main take-home message is similar to Deborah in that an integrated approach is really needed, and coming from a GP background, we always try for this. I'll talk a little bit about Homeless Healthcare, the organisation that I work for. We'll do a case study. I'll give you an idea of what reproductive and sexual health looks like in a homeless setting, and then we'll talk about some barriers and enablers. So Homeless Healthcare is a not-for-profit organisation. We're here in Perth, and we run a sort of a GP clinic, set up like a regular GP clinic. We also do a lot of outreach, sort of assertive outreach, going to places where people who are experiencing homelessness already are. So we go to women's refuges, drug and alcohol rehabs, transitional accommodation places, adult drop-in centres, and also youth drop-in centres. We have a street health program, which is nurse outreach, and they'll go, like pictured here in the top picture, and they'll follow the soup van and engage with people in that way. We also have an after-hours support service, which supports people once they've been rehoused, and we do a hospital inreach into Royal Perth Hospital. So we really try and have a wraparound approach and getting into people to see people in the places that they're already in. So I'm going to have a chat about my case study now. This is a lady I've seen in the last month, and I chose to talk about her because she's, in her complexity, she's not unusual in the patient population that we see. And so I guess that kind of sets the scene as to what you need to be thinking about when considering all the different things that are happening in people's lives at the time. So Sarah is a 30-year-old woman, and she presented 6 weeks pregnant. She had a long reproductive history, having had 20 pregnancies, and she'd had 2 children who weren't currently in her care, and 16 miscarriages with a bicornate uterus, also 1 termination. She'd been on the oral contraceptive pill and taking it well until a few weeks ago she'd run out, and so didn't have any more, had a casual partner. Her mental health was extensive, as you can see, and this is a really common picture in homelessness. So she had complex PTSD, past intimate partner violence, childhood sexual abuse, depression and anxiety, also borderline personality disorder, and polysubstance abuse. So this is, it kind of gets you to start thinking about how she may have become homeless when she's had a history that includes all of those things. She had physical health problems with asthma and chronic pelvic pain, and chronic pelvic pain is often seen with a complex trauma history like she had. She had 2 children in the care of the state, unstable accommodation, no family support, and no agency support at this time either. So we saw her initially at 6 weeks at a drop-in centre. We established the pregnancy. She had abdominal pain. It ended up being referred on to a tertiary hospital, maternity hospital, where this was investigated. And she had a 4-day admission, had lots of investigations. We saw her again a couple of weeks later, and she couldn't really explain what had happened during that admission, but she was very upset and adamant she would never be going back to that hospital. And I think what we can see here is that she's had traumatising events at that hospital, and this is a re-traumatising event. So it demonstrates often where you see this problem of getting... I've just noticed my time is not ticking. You might want to start that. of integrating with the health system, it can be quite difficult. So we saw her again. She had hyperemesis gravidum, and so a lot of vomiting during her pregnancy. Again, this is seen a lot in stressful situations. And of the 4 things you might use first line to treat that, only 1 is PBS funded. So that really limits her choice, and even then she couldn't afford to pay that gap. She really wanted to continue this pregnancy. She was feeling positive about it, if not quite overwhelmed. And at this stage, she disclosed she'd had previous reproductive coercion, and an ex-partner had forced her to have a termination. and she was really adamant that she didn't want to go down that line again. In between, her next visits were contacted by Child Protection Services, and they requested information, which they can do under the Child Protection Act. And so we need to let them know that she was pregnant and whether or not she was using drugs and alcohol at this time, which she wasn't. We saw her again a couple of weeks later, and unfortunately she'd become homeless again. She'd been in contact with the partner's family, and they'd said that if she continued with the pregnancy, they would take custody. And also Child Protection Services had said that if she didn't have increased supports at the time of the birth and somewhere to live, then the child would be taken from her care. And she just felt that she couldn't go forward with this situation, and so she requested a funded termination, which we could organise for her through King Edward Hospital can fund them, and they can, you can have a termination then at Marie Stopes. So this is sort of how her journey panned out. So if we look at sexual and reproductive health and health as a whole in a homeless population, chronic multimorbidity is the norm. So drug and alcohol, mental health, chronic health problems, acute health problems, and also trauma history is what we see every day. And women who experience homelessness have higher rates of STIs, unintended pregnancy, higher rates of adverse pregnancy outcomes, and also intimate partner violence. So what we see is that healthcare, and in particular things like contraception, isn't really a priority when people are concerned about day-to-day basic survival. And Maslow's hierarchy of needs demonstrates this well. If you're down in that red section, where you're thinking about breathing, food, water, sleep, clothing, all these things, it's really difficult to move on to think about your health and your family and relationships and so on. So once you've met those needs, you can move up to the next level. But most of the patients we see are stuck down in that red section where they're just meeting their day-to-day needs. So if we look at abortion and homelessness, it's a very complex relationship because becoming pregnant can be a cause of homelessness. Someone might lose their accommodation because it's not suitable for a baby, or they might be kicked out of home, or they might be in a domestic violent relationship that becomes intolerable when they become pregnant or with a child. So this complicates things. Unfortunately, Child Protection Services are really necessary, and involvement is necessary, and this can sometimes have the effect of delaying presentation to maternity services and antenatal care, and obviously then delaying presentation and request for referral to abortion services. So we do tend to see later presentations, often second or third trimester as the first point of antenatal care. So if we think about barriers, we can sort of split them into, so barriers of access to abortion and contraception, we can split them into practical and intangible. So practical are things like cost, and that's obvious. Even a small barrier like a $6.50 gap fee can really mean you don't buy the pill that week, and then that can lead to pregnancy. Being contactable is difficult. People lose and have their phones stolen, they don't have an address, so they don't know about appointments that are coming up, and it's hard to keep track of day-to-day what the date is and that kind of thing. Medication security is difficult, and people's medications are lost and stolen frequently. Also, there's a low level of health literacy as well as general literacy, and so you can't make any assumptions when giving people information about contraception that they're going to be able to read it or follow it up. And practical things like a medical termination, you can't have a medical termination on the street, so it's just things like this. Then in more intangible things, the complex health needs means that in a consult, you really deal with the most pressing and urgent thing at the time, which is usually not contraception in the patient's mind. And so it's always an add-on to an already complex consult. And that's the same with STI screening as well. It's added on. We see reproductive coercion frequently, and Rochelle will elaborate on that. You also see hypervigilance and paranoia a lot, and this is a really highly traumatised population, and presenting for appointments can be very tricky and difficult, and often this is a reason for not presenting. There's a lot of stigmatisation, and people often express to me that they won't go back to a service if they've had one bad experience at that service. It'll just rule it out for the future. And so this is a real barrier to access. And there's a lack of trust both of the medical system and of medications. So really, although it would be great if we could increase the services that provide termination and contraception and the number of services that are out there, and legislation could certainly be improved, it's often what I see is not a lack of services, but the barrier due to people being able to access those services. So we'll just chat a little bit in my last section about what we can do in moving forward. So what we try to do is to use a real patient-centred approach. And that means looking at the patient and who they are at that moment, what their needs are, and what we can do to meet those needs in a way that's acceptable to that patient and convenient to that patient. So we do flexible service provision, going to places where people are already, sort of assertive outreach, and also flexibly in no appointment times. If that's what suits people, they can drop in. I had a consult this week with a patient who needed contraceptive advice, and her toilet training toddler needed a moment in the bathroom, so we had the consult in the bathroom. Because then it's just about figuring out what that patient needs at that moment. Having a trauma-informed care approach is really important, and that's I think this could be used across the board in medical provision of care, and really it's looking at what's this person's experiences have been and how that's affecting their decision making, how that's affecting their interaction with the healthcare system, and considering that. Also, supportive services, so medical practitioners and nursing staff being really advocates for the patient. So we do a lot of calling up, making phone calls, making sure referrals are appropriate and will run smoothly, and even taking people to appointments. Continuity of care is always wonderful, and it develops trust over that long period of time. And so we try to do that and to offer as many things under the one roof as we can, so services that people need. And when we can't offer it, getting support from specialist services and helping to ease that transition into a specialist service. Lastly, I guess addressing misconceptions and assumptions is really important, and that's both our own and the patient's, and that's something that we can work on together in figuring out what they are, and then how we can go forward in a way that the patient finds acceptable and we find acceptable. So last year I went to this conference in New Zealand, and Matthew Golden spoke there, and he put it really well. He said we need to spend more time trying to change our healthcare system to suit our patients rather than vice versa. And I think that's sort of was my take home message from that conference, and I hope something you'll consider today. Okay, I think I've got under time.